if we have a lower pH, where we have more acids, because we don't have enough saliva, that things start to break down very, very quickly. And in this acidic environment, the minerals in your saliva start to kind of leach out, so the teeth start to become more brittle. So if you are dealing with, you know, more than one medication, you've really got to be mindful that's going to have some sort of chemical effects on what's going on in your mouth.
Have you ever wondered why your loved one's teeth are looking so bad, especially after being in treatment for serious mental illness? Our guest today explains why and what we can do about it. Welcome to our podcast, Schizophrenia, Three Moms in the Trenches. From the place where schizophrenia and real life collide.
East Coast, West Coast, Middle America.
With Miriam Feldman, Mindy Greiling, and Randy Kay. This is an episode that a lot of our listeners have been asking for, and it is about serious mental illness and the challenge of teeth, dental care. We're going to talk about teeth tonight. We can't talk about teeth without having a dentist on board. So in a moment, we're going to bring in Dr. Lauren Yasuda Rainey, who's going to answer some of our questions and concerns, and we're just delighted to have her here. But first, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. We are three moms with three sons whom we love with all our hearts. And our sons each happen to develop schizophrenia, pretty serious mental illness. If you're here listening, I'm assuming you may be in the same boat. We've each written books about it, and we're each advocating in our own way for change and for the health of our sons. And we're just getting by. We're doing the best we can do. So, Mindy, what is happening with you and your family right now?
Well, I shared with Randy before the show, I got this text from Jim, son Jim, about an hour ago, and it says, heads up, you're going to be very upset with me. So I've been kind of stressing out, like, what did he do? Did he buy some marijuana, or did he not take his meds, or what? And he just got home minutes ago and showed me what I was going to be upset about. He ordered a package from a place where he was getting some clothes, and he did what I always tell him not to do. He just ripped it open without following the dotted lines, and it's not what he ordered. So he has to send it back. But that is all it was, you know, and I thought of all these worst case scenarios. So,
oh God, those are the words you just never want to hear. I know.
I know it.
And isn't it lovely to have a normal problem?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a normal problem that, you know, would be a big deal to someone else. We're like, oh, is that it? Okay.
I know.
We can deal with that. Mimi, I know you're muting for a lot of this. You want to, anything to share with the peanut gallery?
No, things are fine. We're in a flurry of preparation for my daughter's wedding next week. And Nick is coming, and we bought him a beautiful new suit jacket, and we're all very excited. So we get to do some normal, fun, regular people things too.
That's awesome. And yeah. I have actually just visited Ben in jail, and it was better because this was an afternoon visit and he's very awake at 1:30. When I visit him at 9:30 in the morning, I guess they stay up and they cook whatever, and then he sleeps through breakfast, which is like 4 a.m. And if I visit him at 9:30, his eyes are drooping down. So he was very, very awake. He did give me permission to talk about his teeth tonight. He said, what are you talking about on the podcast? And when Lauren, Dr. Rainey comes on, I will share what he had to say about his teeth and gave me permission to do that. So that's cool. This morning, I was on a show, which is another podcast, which has the origins of being a local radio show here in Connecticut. It's Judge Lisa Wexler, who was one of our earliest guests on this podcast. She's a probate judge in the town of Westport, Connecticut. She is amazing at what she does. And she also has a radio talk show. That's her love of communication. She talks everything from politics to interviewing Fran Drescher. Like, it's her baby. She just loves to do it. And She had me on this morning to talk about criminal justice and serious mental illness. And we also talked about finding joy. So that was fun. It's the Lisa Wexler Show, W-E-X-L-E-R. And you can check that out. It's a really good podcast. She's a really good host. And that's what's going on here. I want to say that we are having this episode in response to our listeners. And so we're going to be asking about schizophrenia in particular and why so many of our loved ones have teeth that don't seem as healthy as they could be. Is it the medications? Is it the lack of care? We don't know. So we are going to bring on Dr. Lauren Yasuda Rainey. She had completed a general practice residency at Tufts University School of Dental Medicine. And at Tufts, a lot of her time was spent treating people with medically complex needs and also managing the patients with her co-residents that came through the Tufts Medical Center Emergency Department. And we all know a lot of people with serious mental illness go through the emergency department. So right now she's teaching dentists all over the US and Canada minimally invasive restorative techniques. And she's also active giving back to her community through her involvement in Girl Scouts and Mommy Dentists in Business, which I love. So, and by the way, in her free time, you can find her outdoors or whipping up a cake. So please welcome Dr. Lauren Yasuda Rainey. Welcome.
Awesome. Thank you for having me today. I'm excited to be here and share a little bit about how I spend my days and sort of what brings me sort of purpose.
Yeah. So
your
you know,
Girl Scout background reminds me of my daughter. She was a Girl Scout leader up until our granddaughter went to college a year and a half ago, and also your other activities. And I want to give a shout out to my daughter who found you. Angela Greiling-Keen was one of our guests when we had our three of our daughters on for sibling conversations mm-hmm. with a brother with schizophrenia. But Angela's very networked nationally, as it sounds like you are too. And that's how we were able to find you through the Dentist National Network. So thanks to Angela and thanks to you.
Actually, it was thanks to the Mommy Dentist in Business Network. So not just dentists, but there's about 10,000 mom dentists in there, people that identify as mom dentists in the US and Canada. And it was a colleague that does a lot of speaking and advocacy on the national level. And she reached out and said, hey, I think you'd be great for this, given your background. What do you say? So, you know, there's a place for women at all the tables. And if there's
networking
a way that I can, if I can sort of help another dentist out, I mean, regardless of how they identify, but definitely in situations like that, I have a hard time saying no.
Well, we're glad you're here. I'll kick it off with a question. Well, first I want to ask you, do you have, and why is it just out of the experience that you happen to have in dental school, or why do you have a special interest in dental work for people with, I know it's medically complex, but serious mental illnesses? Is there a personal reason, or is just the way your practice has worked out?
So that's an interesting question. I think at the time I didn't realize that's kind of where my interest tended to lie. But my job before I went to dental school, I was a teacher and I was based abroad. And my teaching post was at a school a rehabilitation school for kids. And this was in southern Japan on a southern island. And I was there as the English teacher / cultural ambassador. And I didn't have any experience with anyone really that I knew sort of outwardly with any sort of like complex medical needs, mental illness or otherwise, until I was in that situation. And I got to know those students over the course of a year. I was supposed to be teaching English, but mostly it was just I was a cultural person that didn't live in this little town normally and just came in and was there on Mondays and Tuesdays and, you know, sang songs in English and just got to know these people as people. So I left that job post and then I applied to dental school. And when I was in dental school, it became very clear that there is a severe access to care issue for people with complex medical needs. A dental office in a private practice setting is unfortunately built for the healthiest and wealthiest segments of our population. And again, at the time, I did not realize that. And when we do residency in dental, which is not required, you end up going through this sort of match process where you go interview at a bunch of locations and the locations interview you, and a computer kind of puts them all together and you find out the spot. And the place that I ended up going was Tufts. And it turns out their patient population at that particular program were people with a serious mental illness that had been institutionalized in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and were still in these locations that they didn't have homes to go back to, right? These people were in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and were living in, I forget the term that they used to describe, I guess, developmental centers, I guess was the term that they used. So of the four residents, each of us, you know, 1 week a month would go to the operating room to care for these people, our patients, and a lot of them were in this program. And so we got a lot of experience treating patients with just complex medical needs, in addition to managing the emergency department at their main campus in downtown Boston. So four residents, 4 weeks, 1 week a month, we were doing these pretty complex cases, and it just became something that I wasn't really exposed to as a person before then or as a dentist before then, but I came to realize that it's not hard to treat people with medically complex needs. You just need to ask a few more questions and understand a little more background and be willing to just be flexible. And it's not a glamorous part of, I think, a general dental practice. You don't really advertise yourself, I think, as, hey, this person has a lot of medical needs because their mouth is dry. These are not the cases you see on Instagram or TikTok or on a billboard where you get, you know, all your teeth in one day. It just kind of was a natural progression for me personally from the experiences that I'd had, with a want to just do the best I could with the patient population that presented itself.
That is so cool. I just had lunch today. I'm in a group with actually six moms. All of mm-hmm. us have sons with schizophrenia. And today, one of them already knew that you were going to be on. And so she was so excited. They were all excited. And the one mother said that her son, she wanted me to ask you about the psych meds, because her son, since he's been on all these heavy duty meds, she mm-hmm. said his bottom teeth are actually almost seem like they're moving or something. And she was wondering if that could be caused by the meds. And then in general, I'm sure our listeners want to know, do the meds affect teeth, the psych meds especially?
Yes, like absolutely. And again, I didn't really see that firsthand until I was out of dental school. I mean, dental school, we get, you know, 1 week of a rotation through a special care clinic or in a hospital setting. And the rest of it is just like bringing you up to speed on like how to like do the stuff that dentists do. There's just not a lot of time built into the schedule. So that full year really focusing on that really exposed me to medications like Lamictal and lithium and, you know, haloperidol for just kind of off the bat. I know that those tend to, or at least used to be, kind of the medications that people with schizophrenia particularly took. So if we just take, you know, lithium, for example, like 20 to 50% of those people that are on that medication experience dry mouth. And dry mouth is an issue for a couple of reasons. So we'll talk. Can we talk about saliva for a minute? Is that going to throw somebody out? Okay.
What? No, that's why you're here.
Okay. So dry mouth is one of the biggest challenges that we deal with a lot of our patients that have what we call polypharmacy. And polypharmacy is where we take, you know, more than one or two medications. And not only do you have the side effects of the one medication, but you've got three or four of them, and they all tend to layer on top of each other. So saliva is a really protective factor, and it's protective in a couple of ways. Saliva acts like a lubricant. It keeps your oral tissue sort of wet, allows for the food to come in, be moistened before you can swallow it. I think we've all like tried to eat a piece of bread, and if your mouth is dry, it just goes round and round and round. We need saliva to make sure that it creates that bolus, which is that little ball of food that we're able to swallow and pass it to the digestive system. The moisture in your saliva also pushes like food debris off of your teeth, down to the floor of your mouth, and eventually you swallow it, right? You don't end up having crumbs there sitting all day, because naturally it goes sort of down the hatch. Saliva also has enzymes in it, and enzymes break down sort of food product into little smaller pieces that can be absorbed by your body. So some of what we do is break down the food by chewing. But as the pieces get smaller and smaller, we rely on the chemicals in your saliva to break down the food. So I think you can see if we don't have enough saliva, we don't have those chemicals and we don't have a lubricant. And the third really cool thing about saliva is that it's a pH buffer. Now, I'm a bit of a science nerd, so pH is the, we'll do a quick diversion there. pH is a scale measuring acids and bases. So one being acid, 14 being basic. And your mouth should be at about a pH 7. Again, the saliva is mostly water, so water is kind of neutral. So we want to keep our mouth kind of at that neutral level. If we don't have enough saliva, the mouth tends to skew a little bit acidic. And if we drop down to, so 7 is neutral, if we get down to 5.5, there are two bacteria that cause cavities, Lactobacillus and Streptococcus. And they live at that 5.5 pH. So if your mouth is perfectly, saliva's great, and you're sitting at 7, you could eat all the Snickers bars in the world and you wouldn't get a cavity. If the pH drops and allows that environment for those two bacteria to go wild, you could eat a cracker and that just starts to break down. It's kind of like an extreme way of saying it, but I think you kind of understand the gist that I'm getting here. If we have a lower pH where we have more acids, because we don't have enough saliva, that things start to break down very, very quickly. And in this acidic environment, the minerals in your saliva start to kind of leach out, so the teeth start to become more brittle. Plus the combination of those two bacteria sitting at that acidic level, you've just got a recipe for teeth that are going to start to be thin, to feel brittle, to not feel strong, to kind of look like they're a little bit see-through. So if you are dealing with, you know, more than one medication, regardless if it's one of those I just kind of listed off, you've really got to be mindful that's going to have some sort of chemical effects on what's going on in your mouth.
Wow. Without too much saliva. So clozapine is a drug we've talked about a bit. And I mean, a lot on this program. My son is on it, Mimi's son, and Randy's used to be. It causes excess salivation. Okay. Yep. So what about that?
Well, that can also, again, push that pH balance kind of a different direction. And if there's too much moisture, that can allow sometimes like fungal infections to happen, especially on the sides of the mouth. Kind of those same kind of stuff that turns into thrush, you can get this kind of like crackly sensation on the side of the face. It never gets a chance to dry out. You try and put medication on it, it just gets wiped away. So that can also be, you know, where the skin and the mouth come together, that can be an area that ends up with like fungal irritation. And again, that's just like not terribly comfortable for anyone, nor do you want to have like a fungal growth on the side of your face. Like nobody wants that. Some of these medications also have a side effect of clenching and grinding. So those can, you know, if your muscles are, you know, in hyper function, that can really damage the back teeth, right? Because every single time you bite down, if you're putting a bunch of pounds of pressure back there, like the teeth were not meant to be in that static closed position. The teeth are meant to close around food and then open and be in kind of a neutral posture. Tremors, headaches, both can be side effects of a lot of these other medications. I don't know if that's something that you all have experienced, but again, tremors make it so that they don't, you may not have control over your jaw. I mean, your jaw is a whole bunch of muscles. So in addition to the hypersalivation, hyposalivation, headaches, tremors, glossitis, inflammation of the tongue. I mean, these are all sort of side effects of a lot of these categories of medications, unfortunately.
Wow.
Jim, my son had to have a whole new bridge on the bottom, his bottom four teeth, because he ground so much. He ground those teeth down.
Yeah.
So Mimi, you were telling a story about Nick and his dental care. Maybe you want to ask that question.
Yeah, we had quite an odyssey. And I think this is something that is probably very common with people in our circumstance. But for many, many, many years, my son just didn't take care of his teeth. And so that compounded with all these other things that are medicinally caused that you're talking about, made for a very unhealthy mouth. And it was a long time. It really wasn't until I got him on the clozapine that he even would participate. And we have spent the last 2 years in some pretty serious dental work. But you know, at one point, and this is something that I've spoken to other mothers that the dentists have said to them, at one point when I brought him in, they just said, you know, you should probably just pull all these teeth out and make false teeth.
Yep.
And I just thought, oh my God, you know, he's 35 years old. Now, on top of everything else, he's going to have false teeth. You know, first of all, one more thing to take care of, but also not great for your self-esteem, not, you know. And instead, we bit the bullet, no pun intended, and spent the money, and we had everything kind of resurrected. And yeah, he's doing real well now and taking good care of them now. But I think the problem of not doing any dental hygiene is a big one.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, there is, you know, my son, who I call Ben for publicity purposes, ever since he went on Haldol, but it was happening before, his teeth are now black. A lot mm-hmm. of them are black. And he gave me, I saw him today and he said, you have permission to talk about my teeth. Tell the dentist I said, I'm really sorry I didn't take care of my teeth earlier. And I'm very embarrassed by my teeth right now. Oh. And, you know, so that is a lot for him to give me permission to share, like a message from him is kind of rare. And but is the blackness of the teeth, is that the acidic? Is that because of the acid, or are the teeth just dying? Like we made, before he got arrested, again, if you're new to the podcast, he's not convicted. He's in pre-trial and he's been there for 8 months and on his way to a jail diversion program to get his record cleared. But right now he is incarcerated. I don't think they pay any attention to your teeth in jail, but he hasn't asked also.
Yeah.
Before, we were told that he had about like 20 cavities and that the best thing would be to pull some of the front teeth and put bridges in. Mm-hmm. So the number of questions there is, the blackness one of the symptoms? What does a black tooth mean? Yep. And I echo that question with Mimi about, so if he gets a bridge, and this comes from a listener on our Facebook page as well, just Google, go to Facebook and put in Schizophrenia Three Moms and you can find us. And one listener wrote, my boyfriend is getting dentures at 54. Why is this going to be different? He doesn't care for his teeth anyway. Schizophrenia is the cruelest, most heartbreaking disease on the planet. Black teeth. And what is your experience with, once their smile looks good again, do they take care of it?
You know, every situation has been different. And sometimes we do the treatment, the dental treatment, not just for the patient, but for the family, for the spouse, for the sibling who feels strongly about making sure that their partner, friend, whoever, sibling, child, looks presentable, if you will, to society. So sometimes care is done, you know, at the enthusiasm of the care team, whoever that looks like. And sometimes there's a precipitating event that happens within the person themselves. And for some people, that's the loss of one tooth, and that's enough to get them back on board to figure out, okay, how do we prevent this from happening again? For some people, it's the way it looks. For others, there's a medical complication in the face or jaw that does that. And it's going to be different for each person. And that's what makes it sort of challenging to, you know, sort of, I'm not like lumping all illness together, but that's why these complex medical cases are interesting, because no one of them is going to be the same as the previous.
Right.
But to answer your question about sort of the black coloration, that can come from a couple of different things. There is something that can adhere to the outer surface of the tooth, and it's called chromogenic bacteria. And those can be on healthy teeth, and there's just kind of like iron deposits that kind of get on the teeth. And some people are susceptible to this and other people aren't. But the teeth are relatively healthy. We just need to get them into the office and make sure that it's a superficial cleaning of the surfaces. And sometimes it happens in people that swim, and sometimes it is just people that are susceptible to that, but that's probably not kind of what you're talking about in this specific instance. But that's one way we would see black. Another reason would be from Caries disease, and caries is the disease that causes cavities. Again, those two bacteria that break through the enamel, that demineralize the enamel and get into the dentin, which is the inner layer, and start to break down the tooth structure. Sometimes it looks orange, sometimes it looks a little more brown, sometimes it has a black appearance to it. It kind of depends. Tobacco products and tobacco use can stain those internal parts of the tooth, that dentin that's exposed, a gray or dark color. So that also could be like leading to, again, once you've broken that outer enamel surface of the tooth, you're in the inner layer, it's much more porous. It picks up a lot more stain from food, tobacco,
tea,
even marijuana use. Yeah, tea. So we see black from that. So that is heartbreaking to hear about Ben. And unfortunately, I do hear that from time to time. And I don't ever feel like anyone should apologize to their dental providers. Like that part, that's the part that makes me feel sad. Like, I am here, we are here when you are ready to be treated. And that is my practice philosophy. Like, my responsibility is to make sure that everyone knows what's going on in their mouth. Like, that is my privilege as a dentist and a dental educator, is to give you the information of like what I see, and to bring that to a level that you or your family or whoever it is can understand what your choices are. It is not up to me to make a judgment call on what feels right to you emotionally, financially, functionally. I can certainly like lead you in a direction of, if you want to do it the most cost-effective way, we'll go this path. If we want to go what's going to last the longest, let's go down this path. And we can take a path that's kind of in between the two. But I take that part of my sort of profession pretty seriously. And I know that's not always possible, depending on what kind of like work situation that you're in. If you're in a bigger clinic or you're in a hospital setting or a university setting, sometimes you don't have the latitude to be able to sit down and have these oftentimes lengthy conversations with patients, but also the people that help care for them. Right. So does that answer
It does.
I'd like to follow.
No, go ahead, Mindy.
I was going to say, I'd like to follow up on Randy's comment about jail, that nobody really cares about your teeth in jail. And I'm wondering, Lauren, if you are there any places anywhere where people in jail get dental care? I mean, maybe if they're in extreme pain, someone would let them out.
I want to be fair. I think if my son asked, maybe
you think so?
I don't know. There must be some sort of clinic. There is a med, you know, but he's too proud. And now
there are facilities. And at Tufts, we did see some people in the same. So we used to go to an operating room, and one of the hospitals, we saw patients that were escorted by the security guards. Yeah. So yes, there's
corrections officers, COs.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So if there's a need, I think that can be addressed. I don't know how extreme the need needs to be before anyone intervenes, but there are positions available, and I have seen them. I don't know anyone personally that right now that works in a jail as a dentist, but one of my attendings did when I was a resident at Tufts.
Mm-hmm. Here's what, going back to the acidity of the mouth, the pH balance of the mouth, If I were to relay this information to my son, he would go, well, I'll just go off the meds. Like, that would be. So my question is, other than flossing and brushing, what can one do if you're staying on these medications to restore the pH balance of the mouth once things are fixed, all the cavities are filled? What can we do to help restore the balance while on the meds?
So that's a great question, and there is an actual answer for that, which is good. There are products available out there, both over the counter and by prescription, pH balance, toothpaste, mouthwashes, rinses, sprays. So I know it's very, very hard to change whatever you're already doing. So part of like our comprehensive exam when I see a patient is like, are you already using toothpaste? Great. If you're already using paste, let's put you on a pH balance paste. If you already use mouthwash, let's just swap the mouthwash out. I'm not going to send you home with toothbrush, floss, paste, electric brush, water pick, and like 18 other things. Because we know that it takes 6 weeks to form a habit. Like, are they really going to do 18 things every day for 6 weeks to form those habits? Like, no. So I try and swap out, like, what are you already doing? What's going to be a pretty simple, like, replacement for the product that you're already using? So yes, there are products. There is even floss that is infused with what's called nanohydroxyapatite, which is an enamel, like, rebuilding substance. So if you love string floss, Risewell makes a great product. If you're looking to swap out your toothpaste, there are three of them that I know off the top of my head that are pH balanced. Carry Free carries pH balanced product. That's CARIFREE. They have prescription and over the counter. Coco Lab, which makes coconut floss, coconut infused floss, makes a toothpaste that is pH 8. So that's a little bit basic. And then there's a company called Voco America, and they make Riemann Pro, which is a pH 7. So that is right there where you want to be. So if you're already using paste, you can swap out to one of these things.
And using this, say, twice a day would help to restore the acidity, or do you need to do it more often?
I mean, even just once a day, just to, like, try and put things back into balance. Probably the best protocol that I'm aware of is using what's called Carry Free, makes the pH balance system. They make a mouthwash, and it's like a little chemistry project. You mix A with B, you swish it around, and then you swish with that, and you do that for about 30 days. And that kind of takes all of the good bacteria, allows them to thrive, and get some of that bad bacteria out of there, and brings that pH back to neutral. It does taste a little bit like swimming pool water mixed with apples or swimming pool plus mint, but it's very, very effective. And that's a good way to kind of get your baseline back to normal. And then you can use these other regular pastes, these other pastes or flosses or washes, mouthwashes after that.
Wow.
So yes, there's a little bit of, we got to do the front end work, but I think any little bit's going to help. And just showing people and helping them know that there is some, you have agency, just showing up in the office every 6 months, 1 year, whatever. It's hard to feel like you as a patient have agency in that. If the way that we deliver dental care is see you in 6 months, or you got six cavities and we'll just fix those. Like, we can do something between this visit and next visit at home.
I hope that you are going to send some of these specific names and information to Randy so she can put them in
absolutely.
The show notes.
Okay.
Because I'm too slow to be taking notes here, but I can listen to the podcast again. But if you have, information that could be concise, that would help not only us, but all of our listeners, because I don't think many dentists do that kind of thing. I have not heard of it, and I'm
okay.
I don't know what Jim hears from his dentist, but we're not doing any of this at home.
Yeah.
That is the pH balance thing is something I never knew about. So that is like eye-opening to me. Mm-hmm. And I think something, knowing for someone like my son, he's finally convinced he needs to take care of his teeth. If I sent a picture of his mouth, you would think, anyway, that's logic. And
just happy that, like, someone has kind of gotten to that precipitating point where they've decided that they are ready and they want to make a change, right? I could tell you all the things in a textbook all day long.
Right.
And you know what
Can
I mean?
Can I just report also that after 2 years of all this arduous and extremely expensive dental work, Nick is completely down to 360, and he is taking excellent care of his teeth. And it's so gratifying because I think when you realize, because the problem with this disease is there's psychosis and there's lack of understanding of reality. So, I mean, when you're running around trying to keep your kid alive, the teeth somehow becomes the last thing you think about. And then 10 years later, they've got 70 cavities.
Leads into my, go ahead, Lauren.
I was just going to say, I also recognize for our patients with complex medical needs, teeth is one piece. There's also orthotics and back braces and shoe inserts and psych evals and therapy. It's just another thing on the list that just kind of gets done eventually. And I fully recognize that it is one piece of the very big puzzle that our families deal with. So I
you know, one more thing I wanted to mention also that we ran into, which I'm sure isn't uncommon either, is they did have to pull out some teeth because they were just too far gone in the back, and they wanted to put implants. Mm-hmm. And he won't have it. He does not want something put into his body. And that is also something that I've heard for many times over from other people. But evidently for him, where his teeth are in the back, it's okay for now that he doesn't have them. But I have a friend whose daughter has no teeth at all. And she just won't let anybody look in her mouth, let alone implant something.
She has no dentures or anything. She won't wear dentures or anything like that. And that's
but there's a big fear of implanting things into their body due to the nature of the illness.
Of the paranoia. Ditto for Jim. He's done a 180 as well. He's taking care of his teeth. He's even asked his dentist for teeth whitening things that he brings home with tubes, and he's very proud of his teeth now. I'm thankful for that. I wanted to ask you about MA benefits, Medicaid benefits for people with mental illness, or often that's their only health insurance. But yet, last I checked, it only reimburses dentists for like a quarter of what regular insurance would reimburse. And I want to know if it's still that paltry. And also, then that means that they only get once a year checkup instead of twice a year, like my dental insurance. The one mother that I mentioned this lunch today that I was at, she said her son went to a dentist and he or she literally only cleaned half of their teeth, of her son's teeth, because he was only being paid that much. So he didn't clean the whole mouth. I mean, we were all shocked that any live human being could do that, but that's what her son's dentist did. So I'm wondering what impact is the low MA reimbursement rate? How does that play out for people with mental illness that rely on MA getting any dental care?
Sure. May I respond to the half mouth thing first?
Yes, please.
So I told you there's a couple of diseases we treat in dentistry. One is caries disease, which is the bacteria that causes cavities. Another one is periodontal disease, and that has to do with gums and the bone that supports the teeth. And if periodontal disease is aggressive, which it oftentimes is in people, and it's not really diagnosed a lot in this country for whatever reason. Most of us probably have periodontal disease and we're running around with it. Whether or not we've been told or we've been treated for it is a completely different story. But if there is significant periodontal disease that is evident on x-rays and an exam, what is recommended for treatment of the disease is deep scaling and root planing. And typically that is done one half of the mouth at a time. So that may be, I'm not there. I don't know. But if you get fully numb, a lot of times insurance companies will not pay for all four quadrants of your mouth to be cleaned at one visit unless you can prove to them that you spent adequate time and have a narrative as to like why you had to do all four at once, because someone must think that you can't do an effective job. So for whatever that's worth, I don't know that this dentist was a shyster and doing anything unusual, but without a diagnosis, but I can see how that could be a reasonable situation for someone that had periodontal condition that presented to the office. So if that's helpful to your friend to know, I also prescribe
She'll be listening. So I hope it is helpful.
So I hope that's helpful. And without like knowing anything else about the story, just to throw out to there, whoever the dentist was, like
it maybe may not they were be a doing their situation. Job.
Correct. Right. So back to the Medicaid question. So part of what I do as an exam, and I think there's a number of dentists out there that do, is we do what's called a risk assessment. And we look at the overall risk factors at each individual person. And of those risk factors, we look at, are there a bunch of medications? How often have you been there? Have you had a cavity in the past 3 years? What does the diet look like? And if it's either a low, moderate, high, or extreme risk. My guess is that most of the patients that I've seen with complex medical needs fall into that high risk and extreme risk category. If you are a low risk patient, you haven't had a cavity in 3 years, you eat 3 meals a day, you drink mostly water, you don't take any medications, and you use fluoridated toothpaste, and you don't have any demineralization, in those patients and in those patients only, an annual exam or once every 18 months is probably okay, because you have demonstrated that you have a low risk for, again, of those dental diseases, for developing something extreme in the next 12 months. So for those patients, yes, that would be reasonable. For the people that we're describing today, for people in your family that have these complex medical needs, that is not the case. And a once a year exam and a once a year sort of cleaning of whatever kind, whether that's a deep cleaning or otherwise, is not addressing this chronic disease. Periodontal disease, which includes, again, gingivitis, which is gum disease, and periodontitis, which is when the gum starts to become inflamed, that it deteriorates the underlying bone. If you have either one of those diseases, those are considered chronic diseases, like high blood pressure or hypertension or diabetes. And we do not treat those. We don't treat gum disease like a chronic disease yet.
We should.
Yeah. And again, if a lot of times, if you're in a private practice setting where you can have these longer conversations with your providers, there is exchange of information between provider and patient, and there can be an understanding of, oh, this means that I build up tartar, the tartar leads to inflammation, the inflammation is a chronic inflammatory response, I need to come back every 3 months. There is no science that I've ever seen that said 6 months was some magic number, that the bacteria come to some critical point that 6 months was like, oh, it's time. No, I treat every patient like an individual. If you're on a whole bunch of medications for chemotherapy right now, we want to see you a little bit sooner, because maybe you can't take care of your gums as much, or maybe one of the medications you're taking causes gum inflammation. So right now, let's see you every 12 weeks. Wow. But you get better and you go back to that low risk state. I don't need to see you every 3 months. Go spend your time and energy and money somewhere else. So it really needs to be an as needed, individualized, basically like medical care, right? Like you got to have a diagnosis and you have to be treated for the diagnosis. I am not surprised, but, you know, saddened to hear that once a year is some standard of care somewhere. Yeah. And if that was not, I wish that was not the case. And I'm sorry.
Thank you. There's just so we know, we have about 10 minutes left and a lot to talk about. I think that talking about cost of care is something to at least mention. Maybe sure. You have ideas about clinics. But one thing I do want to mention, I don't think the average person, mental illness or no mental illness, understands mm-hmm. that teeth are actually connected to your skeleton.
Yes.
And, you know, because the gums are there, we think that they're separate. And maybe that's partly because our baby teeth come out. I don't know, whatever the reason. My son's dentist explained to him that what he's concerned about if the cavities don't get filled is that an infection can go as far as his heart.
Or up to the brain.
Or up to the brain. So, you know, that is something, you know, I trust our dentist and I'm sure it's true, but I wanted to mention it and have you corroborate the information that, you know, teeth care is bone care, is heart mm-hmm. care, is brain yes. care, and that's important. Yes. So it is... first thing when my son gets out, we're going to go straight to the dentist. That's what we decided. he's decided. So, what about cost? We're again, not the implants we'd have to remortgage the house, but even the care and my dentist, like you, presented a few options.
Sure.
But what if someone doesn't have a family to help them?
Yeah.
You know, what options are there for people who want medical care and can't afford it? Are there clinics? Are there students? Can they go to a dental school? Like, are you aware of places where people can get help?
Yeah, that's really tough. The cost. So I used to own a private practice, so I'm very cognizant of like what all these things cost. The overhead in dental practices, especially private practices, is very, very high. The cost of doing business as a dentist is excessive. It's because the materials that we use are expensive. The laboratory materials that we use are expensive. If we use gold, the cost of gold is whatever the cost of gold is, you know, nationally. It's not something that, like I said. So the cost of just doing dentistry is costly, which then gets sort of passed on to our patients. I understand, though, that again, the private practice setup is not set up for the whole of the population, which is quite unfortunate. But I have spent a number of years teaching at a dental school, and that typically is a great place for people to get excellent care in a very comprehensive approach at a fee that is either a sliding scale or a fraction of what it costs in private practice. That being
said, can I just jump in for a quick second?
Yeah, sure.
That's what we ended up doing with Nick.
Great.
He has dental care coverage from his Social Security, but it, you know, it's just
doesn't go very far.
Yeah, and so we went to the dental school in Portland, the OHSU, and they are fantastic. You know, it was so wonderful that both my husband and I have switched to there, and we drive an hour and a half to go to the dentist now. So don't think like the dental school is going to be a lower quality of care, because really, in a lot of ways, I believe it turned out to be a higher quality of care, because you not only had the dental student, but then you had somebody overseeing him and somebody overseeing that person. And so it was really comprehensive.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of that.
They take a long time, though. Is the downside is that your exam
would
be
the downside.
3 hours. Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh.
But it was worth it.
Well, good. I'm really glad to hear that you had a positive experience. I think within university settings, then you also get people that are up with research and they're in with science, and they make sure that they are kind of following, like, where is the trajectory of this technology going? And in a lot of schools, there are also like subset clinics, whether they're specialty clinics, whether just focus on root canal treatment, or they just focus on cosmetics, or they focus on, you know, oral facial pain. And some of them also have special care clinics for people with special health care needs. And that is the department that I used to be a part of. And that was very eye-opening for me to be a part of that, where having complex needs, you weren't this sort of like special patient, like you came in with all the other people, and all the people working in that clinic knew that the medical history list was going to be a long one, and they're familiar with the medications that you're taking, and it's not kind of like starting from scratch every single time. There are also, you know, missions of mercy and free clinics put on by some of the state dental societies. I've participated in California in one called CDA Cares. The California Dental Association used to put those on a number of times a year before COVID. I know they've started to bring those back, but they rent out the entire, it was like the Sacramento Kings Stadium, and everyone, you know, dentists, I brought my team with us. We spent the night before. It was a great team building activity for us as providers. But it was a fantastic way to use the skills that we have to give back to our community. And patients that could, they waited in line to be seen, and they were told, okay, you've got 6 things. Today we can address 4 of them. No cost.
Wow.
There are opportunities available. You have to look for them. But if you talk to your own dental providers, maybe they're connected with local dental associations. I know, like, in the private sector, there are opportunities. There's like groups of dentists that will get together, and they will just do a big case, you know, pro bono. The dentist and the orthodontist and the surgeon have all decided they're just going to do one big case a year. I opened my own private practice office to the Berkeley Free Clinic one year. It was their patients that got to be seen in a real life private practice. And we spent 4 hours, and we did something like $12,000 of free care in a very short amount of time. And my team came in, they went and brought bagels for everyone that came in. It was a great day where we were able to give back locally to our own population of people. So they do exist, but you do need to kind of dig around and see what you find.
Wow. Well, we're coming to our last couple of minutes. So it sounded like, Mindy, you have a question. And then Lauren, I just want to ask you if there's anything we haven't asked you about that you want us to know. So Mindy, go ahead.
Yeah, so maybe with that question, you could address, you know, things that families maybe should know about a dental team, and if they have a child with a serious mental illness. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, Mimi mentioned that, or maybe it was Randy, that somebody didn't want their, didn't want anyone looking in their mouth, didn't want any dental care, and hence didn't have any teeth. Have you had other challenges? Like if somebody came to you and they thought they were psychotic and they thought, you know, the FBI had planted something in their filling, or having to coax people to have dental care if they're kind of symptomatic with their mental mm-hmm. illness. Have you dealt with that? And how do you deal with that?
I have not had someone at this point yet told me there was something, you know, the FBI was not listening, but I've had someone where we got them numb and then they just jumped out and ran out the door. Like they, mm-hmm. they had an episode of some sorts and they safely excused themselves and we made contact afterward and they just said they were not ready, that they had had a history of, I want to say they were post-military service and just had had some really awful experiences. And when they were ready, that they would come back. There are a number of people that have dental phobias for any number of reasons. And again, when we meet patients as new patients, one of the things we just ask is like, what can we do to make this more comfortable for you? And some people are like, this is cool. I've been to a dentist's office a bajillion times, like no big deal. Other people, this is my first time back in 10 years. And it's just hard for me to sit here. So I think meeting everybody where they're at, which kind of like goes into the, like, what should you ask your dental teams? Like, we're people too. Like we're in the business of providing care. Like, yes, it sounds scary and there's some weird noises here and it smells a little funny in like all dental offices, but we want the appointment to go just as well as you do. We want to make sure that we can provide a safe environment for you to receive care. And if someone is, you know, having a moment, like that's not safe with the 12 dental instruments I have sitting on a tray here. Like someone's going to get hurt by accident just from sudden movements, etc. So, you know, I'm not going to be the dentist for everybody. I recognize that very early on, but I have a pretty wide network of people that I've gotten to know at this point in time. And like, if there's something that I can't provide for you, is there something that's like a game changer for you or a line in the sand? I probably know someone that could help you.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So any last minute, we'll put all the resources you mentioned in the show notes before we close. Any last minute things we've left out or any resource you really want people to know about, or just brush and floss?
I mean, brush and floss is great, but if you're not brushing with the right toothbrush or the right paste, like you have some agency outside there. So I'll give you some resources there. But I would say, like, it's always okay to ask. And I see, again, a lot of patients go, well, I never knew that I couldn't have my teeth cleaned with that sonic thing. Or I never knew that I could, like, bring a blanket with me to your office. Or I didn't know that I could bring my own pillow or ask for another headrest. Like, again, we're people. I want to do a good job. I want to provide care. Like, I'm in the business of providing care. I can only do that if you meet me halfway and tell me what would be helpful to you to feel cared for. And if that's bringing music, if that's bringing someone to sit in the waiting room with you, if that is, you know, turning on whatever thing on the screen makes you happy, that's going to make our appointment go a lot smoother. I'm happy to help in a reasonable way to make that happen. So I would just say it's okay to advocate for yourself in a dental office the same way you can advocate for yourself in a medical office or a hospital setting.
Wow. Well, this has been eye-opening and comforting and just so much information. Lauren, I can't thank you enough for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. You touched on a lot of points that I feel like clearly very passionate about. So this is really great for me to be able to share. And I am very reachable. If any of you have questions or you want to pass questions off to me, again, you can reach me via email. I'm on Instagram. You can follow me at Rainey, RAINEYDDS. But I will leave that information in the show notes. If I can't help you, I probably know someone that can.
Wonderful. I wish we could clone you. Could I squeeze in one other small little question?
Please,
here? How many dentists are there like you, would you say, in this country?
I don't know. Well, there's four residents every year that go through Tufts. And there's a great program in Seattle, the Seattle Special Care Clinic, and they have, I don't know, six or so residents that go through that program every year. There's a ton of VAs out there. They see a lot of people with significant mental illness. And so there's a bunch of residents coming out of these programs every year. But, you know, I try and align myself with other dentists that also have a commitment to providing care. So people that I know seem to be like, we're all over the place. They're all in my community. So, but nationally, that's hard. There's a lot of different ways that you can be a dentist in community health, in university settings, in private practice, working for corporations. But I think time and resources is the hardest thing for us as providers. It is just becoming increasingly challenging to run a solo practice as a business owner. The cost of doing business is just, we're business owners and healthcare providers, and we don't have an HR department like a hospital or a legal system like a hospital. So I think we're kind of this very unique kind of squash between both worlds. So it's tough, but I love it. But if you're geographically want to know someone, reach out to me or let me know where you are, and I can see if I can match you up with somebody that I might know or someone that I know might be able to help you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lauren Yasuda Rainey at RaineyDDS on Instagram. And thank you so much for joining us.
Right. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thanks for joining us for this episode of Schizophrenia, Three Moms in the Trenches with Randy Kay, Mindy Greiling, and Miriam Feldman. To get in touch with us or to learn more about our books, please visit our websites at miriam-feldman.com, mindygreiling.com, or randyk.com.